Nanda braja janna ranjana Yamuna chera namichari Jaya radha madhava kunja bihari
प्रदिष्ट अष्टतर सकसी सीमन स्टेफान ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपद की जाए प्रेम्स कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदा विश्वास की गौर भक्ति वृंद की जाए श्रीमद भागवताम की जाए ऑल द वैष्णव आचार्यस एंड चारिणीज टुडे की जाए गौर प्रेमानंद ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Today's really not a Srimad Bhagavatam class, but I have a verse that I have to read, so I'm going to read it. Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 11, text number 32, translation. The insuperable ecstasy was so strong that the queens, who were shy, first embraced the Lord in the innermost recesses of their hearts. Then they embraced him visually, and then they sent their sons to embrace him, which is equal to personal embracing. But, O chief amongst the Bhrigus, though they tried to restrain their feelings, they inadvertently shed tears. I had an opportunity yesterday to mention how the son is equal to the parents. This is confirmed here in this verse today. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Although due to feminine shyness, there were many hindrances to embracing the dear husband, Lord Sri Krishna, the queens performed that act by seeing him, by putting him in the core of their hearts, and by sending their sons to embrace him. Still, the act remained unfinished, and tears rolled down their cheeks despite all endeavors to check them. One directly embraces the husband by sending the son to embrace him because the son is developed as a part of the mother's body. The embrace of the son is not exactly the embrace of husband and wife from the sexual point of view, but the embrace is the satisfaction from the affectionate point of view. Very important difference here. The embrace of the eyes is more effective in the conjugal relation, and thus, according to Srila Jiva Goswami, there is nothing wrong in such an exchange of feeling between husband and wife. Very important instruction there also. So today, we have a plethora of Vaishnavacharyas that have made their appearance, disappearance, and give us a great opportunity. I was actually in immense anxiety preparing for this class. There's some 60 pages of notes and information about these personalities, and of course we don't have 60 pages worth of time for this class. So my debate was, do a little bit on each, pick one, do primarily that, do a little bit about each, even less, and then do one majorly. So on the advice of the advanced Brahmana, I took the path to just give a very short little synopsis, very short, on each personality, and expand primarily on, well, I guess it's fair to say my favorite in today's collection, Pundarik Vidyaniti. Such a wonderful personality. So today, of course, is the first day of spring. Ha, ha, ha. Maybe if you live in a subtropical climate, it's the first day of spring. We are the only state in the entire continental United States that has anything above 20 degrees. Everywhere else in this country is just dying and cold. So, but nonetheless, on our calendar, today is the first day of spring. Traditionally, on the first day of spring, the deities are dressed in yellow. The ladies dress in yellow. There's a lot of yellow colors everywhere. So when the weather warms up, we'll observe that. Today is also the appearance day of Saraswati. And we take the blessings of Saraswati and ask that she please grant us the ability to use our words and that she dance upon our tongue as we glorify the Vaishnava Acharyas. Actually, sometimes people got Saraswati as a demigod, shouldn't, you know, be. But it's interesting because in the Bhagavatam, in the opening prayers to the Bhagavatam, there's the prayer to take the blessings of Goddess Saraswati, as well as the author of Chaitanya Mangala, Lochan Das Thakur, opens his prayers before he starts his work, praying for the blessings of Saraswati. So it is very important that we acknowledge her presence. Today, excuse me, in certain cultures we have a tradition of ladies first, so we're going to start with Srimati Vishnupriya, the wife of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is the day of her appearance, and she's the eternal consort of Gaura Sundar. And in his feature as Gaura Narayan, she is always seen there, and according to Kavi Karnapur and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, she is directly Satyabhama from Krishna's Dwarka Leela, which is the period we're discussing in the Bhagavatam. And she is the ideal embodiment and representation of divine self-surrender at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, it's interesting to note that, of course, it's a different culture, but she was only 14 when Mahaprabhu took sannyas, which means she was married prior to that. And after that, she lived to be quite elderly. She lived her entire life in penance. In the early morning, she would begin the chanting of the holy name. And she would spend the entire day in chanting the holy name. And for every Maha Mantra she chanted, she put aside one grain of rice into a pot. And after she had chanted her quota, then she would take that rice, cook it, offer it to her deity of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then she would take that as her only sustenance. So as a result of this, she gradually became very emaciated and didn't go out and about or anywhere, just kept secluded to herself. She was cared for with Mother Sachi, and then when Mother Sachi passed away, she was looked after by Ishan Prabhu, who was the servant of the family for many years. So, very, very austere, this fixed vow. Another personality from today is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And when we name the different Goswamis of Vrindavan who were living there, their names are all very well known that were there during the time of Mahaprabhu. But later, after Mahaprabhu's disappearance, it mentions that the flow of pure devotion took the shelter in the form of the three famous Prabhus. Of course, Srinivasacharya, Narottam Das Thakur, and Shyamananda Pandit. And surged forward with this force of devotion. And in the disciplic succession coming from Narottam Das Thakur is Vishwanath Chakravarti. He appeared a fourth generation after. And his earlier history is less well known. And what is known is primarily known only to the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. But it's spoken about his excellence in the achievement of demonstrating a careful examination of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. He is considered to be the protector, the guardian, and the acharya of the middle period of Gaudiya Vaishnava history. Nowadays, amongst all the Vaishnavas, there's a saying in relation to Chakravarti Thakur's three most famous books, Kirana Bindukana, Eten Nehi Vaishnavapana, that these three books, Ujjvala Nilamani Kirana, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Bindu, and Bhagavatamrita Kana, are taken and used by the Vaishnavas as their only wealth. So his writings are considered essential to the spiritual wealth of the devotees. In this connection, there's also a verse that's sung very much in Vrindavan and other places too, but because he has shown the Vishvavashis, the residents of the material universe, the path of pure bhakti, he is called Vishvanath. And because he is situated in the chakra circle of the topmost devotees, he is called Chakravarti. So Vishvanath Chakravarti. Raghunandana Thakur is also honored today. And Raghunandana Thakur is an incarnation of the third member of the Chaturvyuha, Prajumna. And he is a very intimate friend of Krishna's. And Kavi Karnapur identifies him in this way during Chaitanya Leela. It's interesting when people would address the topic of Raghunandana Thakur, some people would say, anyone who is dear to Raghunandana will win the mercy of Mahaprabhu life after life. It's not very nice to know. If you wanted the mercy of Mahaprabhu, you became very dear to Raghunandana. But others would say, Raghunandana is so merciful that he gives life to the most fallen and humble. And then others would proclaim, oh, what humility he has. There is no one who is his equal. But yet others would say, oh, he is as beautiful as Kandarpa himself. This is all pointed out from the Bhakti Ratnakar. Sri Raghunandana Thakur had great, great affection for Srinivasacharya. And prior to his disappearance, he consoled Srinivas, because Srinivas was faced with the dilemma that there were challenges to the Vaishnava way of life. And he explained to him, he said, a difficult time is coming in which people will succumb to various doubts in the process of devotional service. Once our Lord Krishna Chaitanya and his companion Nityananda have ended their incarnation, the Vaishnavas in the age of Kali will be anxious with every passing day. Whether very advanced, somewhat advanced, or a neophyte, their hearts will be filled with doubts. But don't let this worry you, Srinivas. Lord Gauranga will accomplish many great works through you. I bless you to remain long on this earth, and that you and your followers will protect the religion of Mahaprabhu. Those who are opposed to devotion to Krishna will become devotees by your influence, and thus they will take shelter of you. A very nice prayer to Srinivas by Raghunandana Pandit. And then, of course, if we speak of renunciation, we must speak of Raghunath Das Goswami. He was the son of Govardhan Majumdar, and his Govardhan's older brother was Hiranya. And Hiranya had no male offspring. So the two brothers, they were always, of course, the father, but the uncle as well, always very, very attached to Raghunath. And very wealthy, great landowners, you know, great opulence in the surroundings. And it's mentioned in those days that their holdings expanded to a very, very large distance, as far as the eye could see and beyond that. For some time, Raghunath lived with his uncle Kalidas in Saptagram. And Kalidas was a great devotee of Mahaprabhu. And Raghunath's family priest is another name we recognize, Balaramacharya. And his own guru was another name we recognize, Yadunandana Acharya. And as a dedicated devotee of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also received the blessings of Vasudev Dutt. So many amazing devotees in his circle of associates, all his seniors and elders. You can imagine how much grace and mercy was flowing on him. So after Haridas Thakur delivered the prostitute that was sent by Ramchandra Kaviraj, Ramchandra Khan, Haridas left there and he went to stay with Balaramacharya. And during that time, Raghunath Das was just a young boy, but he had the opportunity for the association of Haridas Thakur and received blessings from Haridas Thakur. So even more, his circle of seniors is expanding. Raghunath had a great desire to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he begged his father for permission to go to Advaitacharya's house once when Mahaprabhu was there. And Mahaprabhu gave him the following instructions when he met with him there. He said, calm yourself and return home. Do not be foolish. It takes time to cross the ocean of material suffering. Don't make a show of monkey renunciation simply for other people's benefit. Enjoy the worldly life you have around you in a moderate way without attachment. Be fixed on Krishna internally while externally dealing with the world in the appropriate fashion. It will not be long before Krishna delivers you. So although he had this circumstance, he desired to leave all that and join Mahaprabhu, but Mahaprabhu cautioned him in this way. Basically, just do your duty. But then once he did take to the path of renunciation, Mahaprabhu gave him additional instructions, which were a bit different. Do not listen to gossip or engage in gossip yourself. You should not eat very palatable food, nor should you dress very nicely. Always chant the holy name of Lord Krishna without any expectation of honor, offering all respect to others. Mentally render service to Radha Krishna and Vrindavan throughout your life. So two different types of instructions to the same individual, but at two different times in his life. And then that brings us to Pundarik Vidhaniti. During the Braj Lila, Pundarik Vidhaniti was known as Vrishabhanu. And he incarnated in the personality of Pundarik for the pastimes of Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu would often, in separation, he would call to him Father. He would call him by this name. Actually, Gaurachandra had many names for Pundarik. One of them was Premnidhi, you who are the treasure house of love. What a beautiful name there. And Mahaprabhu always treated him with great respect because he was the disciple of Madhavendra Puri, the godbrother of Advaita Acharya. So a little bit about his background and his life is given here. And his original home is what is in now Bengal, Bangladesh, East Bengal. And he belonged to a Brahmin group of families. And there was some difficulty. The family was ostracized and, you know, from their particular caste group, so on. And it was a little disagreement, so they relocated. And, you know, the temple that he originally lived in is still found there. It's still able to be located. And it's been built up a little bit. Pundarik Vidhaniti himself was also very, very rich. Not just rich, but describes extremely rich, but very pure in his actions. In a similar scenario that we found Raghunath, that he was surrounded by all this wealth, but he was not attached, he was very pure. And of course, being very wealthy, he had multiple homes. This is one of the characteristics of those who can afford this. They don't just have one place of residence, they have several places of residence. Some of the other names that we know Pundarik Vidhaniti by, Sri Vidhaniti, Acharya Nidhi, Bhakti Nidhi, and of course the one I mentioned, Prem Nidhi. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appreciated him so much that he said simply by hearing his name, the whole world will become purified. Simply by hearing his name, the whole world will become purified. Now, he lived... After some time, he settled and he lived on the banks of the Ganga. And his associates would sometimes, Mahaprabhu would be in great ecstasy, crying and crying and crying. And his associates would ask him, why are you crying in this way? And then he would begin to describe the character of Pundarik Vidhaniti. And he would say, his character is quite extraordinary. Just by hearing his name, the world becomes purified. But he dresses and looks like a materialistic person in the midst of accrements in a life of pleasure. No one is able to recognize him as a Vaishnava, yet he remains constantly merged in the deep ocean of devotion for Krishna. He never bathes in the Ganga. Now, this might appear to be something quite unique. I mean, everyone bathes in the Ganga. This is the, you know, purpose of living near the Ganga. Pundarik never bathed in the Ganga because he was afraid to let his feet touch the holy waters of the Ganges. He was afraid it would show some type of disrespect. He only goes there to take darshan of the Ganga at night and only takes that darshan from a distance. He cannot bear to see the people engage in offensive behavior to the Ganga by gargling its waters, cleaning their teeth with it, washing their hair in her waters. So he never goes there during the daytime when he would see these things. He didn't want to see offenses being made, so he simply just didn't go there. He engages in the worship of the deity without having... He never engages in the worship of the deity without having taken a drink of Ganges water for purification. Because of his apparently materialistic behavior, if you see him, you will not be able to recognize him. But I feel unwell because I am not able to see him. So Mahaprabhu acknowledged that one cannot recognize a Vaishnava by externals. Particularly, one cannot recognize Pundarik Vidyaniti. Now, I find one of the most interesting aspects of Pundarik's life is the position that he holds in teaching us about caution in offending Vaishnavas. In committing offenses at all, actually. And interestingly enough, he's on both sides of that coin when we look at committing offenses. Because if offenses are committed, there's the person who has committed the offense and then the person who the offense has been committed against. And he plays both sides of this in his lila with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When he, first a little background here. Mukunda Dutt and Vasudev Dutt were acquaintances of Pundarik Vidyaniti. And it turns out that Gadadhar Pandit's father, Madhava Mishra, was a very good friend of Mukunda. So Mukunda had some senior kind of encouraging role in the life of Gadadhar Pandit. So at this time, Pundarik was living in Navadvip. And Mukunda said to Gadadhar one day, he said, I'd like to introduce you to a great Vaishnava, someone you have not met who was very, very exalted. Now, Gadadhar Pandit was a brahmachari. Not only a brahmachari, but a brahmachari. You know? I remember, I remember when we brahmacharis would put on orange Brahmin threads, because orange is the color! And all of our book covers were orange, and we dyed our socks orange, and our hats were orange, and we were brahmacharis. Now we're all married. But not like that. Gadadhar Pandit was a very, very strict naistika brahmachari. Very, very detached from sense gratification. Very into an ascetic lifestyle. Very, very renounced. And so Mukunda thought, you know, it's time for you to take some direction. So it'll be very good for you to meet Pundarik Vidyaniti. So please, you come with me. So he took him. So you can imagine Gadadhar Pandit is very excited. You know, he's going to meet some Baba, maybe just in a loincloth with matted locks and very renounced and sitting on a bed of nails or something. You know, who can understand how he was thinking, you know? And so they went to meet Pundarik. Pundarik Vidyaniti was sitting on a large brass bed. And this brass bed had the finest of pillows and mattresses. And they were all covered in sheets that were color of pure white foam of milk. There were red silk pillows, so we can get the color combination here. It's going very nicely so far. And nice red silk pillows. And these red silk pillows had gold trim around them, with gold tassels that had white pearls hanging at the end of them. So everything's blending very nicely right here. And then there was a three-tiered, not just a one-tiered, but a three-tiered canopy hanging above his head, a chhatra, as we say, an umbrella. The top layer was a little small, and then the second layer, and then the third layer, and on the third layer were strings of the finest cultured pearls looped all the way around it. And in between where the loop would be was a little tassel of gold hanging like this. It's very, very amazing. And he was wearing the most opulent and expensive of silk and cloth. Very, very nice bundi, and the most opulent of some type of silk dhoti. And it doesn't mention, but I'm quite sure they were very colorful. We cannot imagine a personality such as this just wearing plain white. And he was fragranced with the most attractive of perfumes. You could smell them as you entered the room. And it wasn't like, oh, God, that's too much. It was like, oh, my God, this is heavenly. And just to his left was a hookah. And he was smoking this hookah. And just to his right was a golden tray, a golden stand. And on that stand was a marble tray. And in that tray were different selections of tambu and betel and things of this nature. And this was all just within hand's reach. So he didn't have to strain himself in any way. And of course, once doing all this business, there's a need to relieve what's in the mouth. So there was a beautiful golden spittoon adorned with jewels right at his feet. And there was an incredibly opulent mirror on both sides. Not just one side, but on both sides. And Punderik was in a very light mood, laughing very joyfully and heartily. On one side, there was a servant fanning him with a peacock fan. And on the other side was a servant fanning him with chamra. This was the scenario that Gadadhar Pandit came in to see this great Vaishnava. Now, as I mentioned, Mahaprabhu said, you cannot recognize a Vaishnava by their externals. No one can even recognize that Punderik is a Vaishnava. So this was the state of mind that Gadadhar Pandit came in. Not only was he disappointed, he felt completely let down that, oh, this is what I'm spending my day? This is what I came to see? You know, he was expecting some great sadhu, you know, someone he could take shelter of and learn from, but instead he sees this sense gratifier. Is this a Vaishnava or is this some prince wallowing in the luxury of comforts of life? So as a result of all this, a doubt, an offense generated within his mind. Now Mukunda was a little senior, as I mentioned, and he was very advanced, and he could perceive just by the face Gadadhar was making, he could perceive that Gadadhar was doubtful. That he was thinking in his mind, what a waste of time. So, in order to bring out the inner mood beyond all this external of Punderik, Mukunda spoke two verses from the Bhagavatam that kindled the flame of love for Krishna that was always burning in the heart of Punderik. A verse he recites here. How truly amazing! The sister of Bakasura, the evil Putana, was sent on a mission to kill Krishna. He drank the Kalakuta poison mixed with her breast milk, and despite her evil intentions, awarded her the position of a wet nurse. Who is more merciful than he that I should take shelter of him? That Rakshashi Putana was a blood-drinking killer of infants. Not just a blood drinker, not just a killer, not just a killer of children, but a blood-drinking killer of infants. What a horrible description. Even though she wanted to kill Krishna, because she gave him her breast, she attained the auspicious goal of a nurse in Goloka. So these are two verses from the 10th canto that were recited by Mukunda. Once these two verses glorifying Krishna's mercy entered into the ear of Punderik Vidaniti, he cried out, Ha Krishna, Ha Krishna, and immediately went into an ecstatic swoon. They transformed the very nature of Punderik's actions to the point to where tears began to flow from his eyes like a flood of Ganges water. Perspiration rained off of his body. The hairs on his body stood on end. He began to rip off the embroidered, beautiful silk garments that he was wearing and thrash about wildly, kicking his legs, knocking over the stand with the betel, knocking over the spittoons, pushing aside the hookah, tearing at the pillows, throwing things asunder, just a complete sense of ecstatic feelings rolling about. He fell off of his seat, rolling about on the ground. He was breaking his mirror and just completely smashing and shredding everything. 10 of his servants came and tried to hold him down. But it was a great difficulty for them because his love for Krishna in this mood of separation produced this type of ecstasy. 6 hours later, he returned to his external consciousness. And he was very calm and composed. He must have looked around and, oh wow, what a mess we have here. When Gadadhar Pandit saw these high level of transcendental ecstasy that was manifest in the personality of Pundarik simply by hearing these glorious verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam, he realized, I've committed a grave offense. This is a very advanced devotee. And he began to regret his thinking. He decided in his mind, for such an offense that I have committed against Pundarik by judging him only according to his externals, there is only one path that I can take to rid myself of this, and that is to take initiation from Pundarik Vidhyanidhi. So he relayed this idea to Mukunda. Mukunda smiled and shook his head, you know, that typical way, yes, yes, it's a very good idea, very good idea. He then went and communicated this to Pundarik Vidhyanidhi, and they happily set a date for the initiation. Mahaprabhu also gave his approval for this initiation. And so in due course of time, Gadadhar Pandit took Diksha from Pundarik Vidhyanidhi. So this is the one side of the coin we see, where Pundarik Vidhyanidhi, due to no fault of his own, due to simply executing the circumstance in life he had in the external situation, was mistakenly judged as being a Vishayi. A devotee of high caliber came before him and judged him externally and thus created an offense against him. But that devotee, upon understanding the nature of this offense, corrected himself. How fortunate is Gadadhar Pandit? Nowadays, we see that even if someone is corrected, even if their fault of criticizing another person is pointed out, still they did not give up that attitude. If you have any doubts about this, just go to the internet. It's vicious out there sometimes. So Gadadhar Pandit was able to understand this mistake, this offense he made, and correct himself. So this is one side. Another side of this places Pundarik in a different position. After some time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself took sannyas. As we heard earlier, he left Vishnupriya, Sachimata, and he moved to Puri. This, of course, was at the request of his mother. She understood. Her desire was, you just stay around here, be a sannyasi, but just stay around here. He's like, no, mom, I can't do that. just like a mother. Just live here in the house, we'll take care. No, no, mom, I can't do that. So he agreed to live in Puri, and this way, because the devotees regularly went between Bengal and Puri, she would be able to be kept informed about his activities. So Pundarik Vidhyanidhi was in Puri. It was a common thing that we mentioned this many times, under the direction of Shivananda Singh, it was a common thing that the devotees would go from Bengal to Jagannath Puri for the 4 months of Chaturmasi, when all the different festivals were taking place, Rath Yatra and Dola Yatra and Janmasthi, all these different things. So they spent a month traveling, 4 months there, a month traveling, about 6 months of the year, they did basically nothing but Hari Hari Bol. So Pundarik Vidhyanidhi was there. And let me just catch up with my notes here. Ah, here we go. So, this particular trip, Pundarik decided to stay in Puri after the devotees returned to Bengal. And that allowed him to be in Jagannath Puri during the Odhan Shasti festival, which is just at the beginning of the cold season. This is a particular festival observed when it begins to be a little cold, so an additional cloth wrapper, is a chadar, is offered to Lord Jagannath. But it is offered with starch in it. Everyone knows when you go to Ganga Prasad's and you buy your new dhoti or your new sari, you can pretty much stand it up on the floor on its own because it has so much starch in it. And you have to wash it and then wash it again and then wash it again and maybe a fourth time, okay, five times. And finally all that comes out and it becomes like this. It is noted in Hari Bhakti Vilas that one should not offer starch cloth to the deity. So Pundarik Vidyanidhi himself was a very pure Sadacharya. He's very pure in following these different types of rules, and he was attached to the proper etiquette of observing Vaishnava practices. So Lord Chaitanya and all of his devotees, including Pundarik, they came to the temple of Jagannath on this day of Odan Shasti. And they observed the new garments, the festival of offering these new garments. There were many mridangas, there were many horns, conch shells. Actually, the verse says, mridangas, muharis, shankas, dundubis, kahalas, dukkas, dagadas, and kadas, which all made a great musical sound. Maybe our Sanskrit scholar knows what some of these things are. I should have consulted with you prior to this to give the proper instrument. But let's just suffice it to say there was a lot of musical instruments. Everybody was having a great time. Kirtan was going on. And there were not just one, but numerous different garments of many different colors that were offered to Lord Jagannath that day. Many different kinds and colors and designs and so on like this. So they watched this festival until the end of the night, and then until the end of the, you know, when the darshan was finished. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all of his devotees, floating in an ocean of love, they then left. Interesting, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself is the worshipper, but he's also the object of worship. But it's only by his mercy that one can understand this. Not necessarily everybody understood this. So manifesting in this wooden form is Jagannath. The Lord is seated on the throne, but manifested in this form as a sannyasi, the Lord is worshipping he who is seated on the throne. So the different colored garments I mentioned, white, yellow, blue, so many colors were sewn. They had gold ornament, gold decorations on them, pearls and all like this. And then after the offering is done of these garments, then a flower offering is offered with flower bracelets and flower crowns and flower garlands, much like we see here on some of our festival days. And then after that, varieties of incense and lamps and all the 16 upacharas, then different scented fragrances are offered, and then a full arti is given to Lord Jagannath. And then after that, many, many, many different types of bhoga are brought before the Lord. So seeing this festival and all the observances like this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very, very happy with all his associates, and at the end of the darshan, they all returned home. Once everyone had left, Pundarik was there. He stayed in the temple afterwards with Swarup Damodar. Now, Pundarik developed in his mind a doubt. This offering of starch cloth, it's not such a good idea. So he said to Swarup, he said, why are they giving starched garments to the Lord? Why are they ignoring the Shrutis and the Smritis? And without even washing it first, in this country, of all places, how do they offer these starched garments to the Lord? Swarup Damodar replied, you please listen to my explanation. There is no fault in this custom that is followed here in this country. Persons who know the Shruti and Smriti may not always observe this particular festival. Still, if the Supreme Lord did not desire this festival, why did he not forbid the king to observe it? This is a very important point, because we should not think, A, that the deity is just stone or wood or brass, and B, that the deity cannot come and go as they want. If anyone thinks like that, they should simply refer to the story of Shakshigopal. The deity stays and comes and goes by their own desire. They do not place themselves anywhere that they do not want to be. So, and in many times we've heard of different circumstances where Jagannath appeared in dreams to the king or his servants and gave them instruction. Particularly comes to mind the pastime of Ganga Mata Goswamini, when they imprisoned her, and Jagannath came before the king and said, unless you want great difficulty for you and all your generations, you better go and release her. Oh, many times the Lord would appear to the king. So Swarup Damodar says, if it was not the desire of the Lord to have this festival, would he not appear to the king and forbid it? So he doesn't. Therefore, it is accepted. And Pundarik said, well, that's very good. That's very good. The Supreme Lord can do whatever he likes. But how can the Lord's servants imitate him and do whatever they wish? Why would Lord Jagannath's priests, decorators, servants, and message carriers offer him impure, unwashed, starched garments? Lord Jagannath, this is a supreme personality of Godhead. He may do whatever he wishes, but does that mean that everyone else can do whatever they wish? This is an argument sometimes put forth. If he can do, I can do. What's that we used to say? Do as I say, not as I do. This isn't the standard of Vaishnava behavior, you know. I remember when I was approaching my teenage years, up until that point my father used to smoke. But when I became a teenager, my father quit smoking, and then he told me, you're not going to smoke. So he stopped doing before he told me to stop doing. So Pundarik Vidyaniti continues. When one touches an unwashed starched garment, one must immediately cleanse his hand. It is contaminated. Why would an intelligent person not follow this rule? Not thinking like this, the king's representatives, the pujaris, they put unwashed starched garment on the supreme king's head. So he was making a point that the king is a representative, the king is being represented by these pujaris, and they're placing this contaminated, unclean thing on Jagannath. Therefore, the king is getting a result of this. Swarup Damodar shook his head. He said, listen, my brother, please, just listen. There is nothing wrong with this Odhana Shasti festival. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has descended to this world as Lord Jagannath. He does not have to think about rules and prohibitions. Pundarik said, yes, yes, brother. Now you please hear my words. You can see it's a very polite argument. It's clearly an argument, but it's a very polite one. Yes, yes, brother, but now you please hear my words. Lord Jagannath is indeed the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If he jumps over any rule or prohibition, he is not to be blamed. He is the Personality of Godhead. He is indeed showing that by staying here in Jagannath Puri. He may neglect all ordinary customs because he is the Personality of Godhead descended into this world. So as the two friends are walking on the path, they're smiling with each other and laughing back and forth as they have this disagreement. Actually, it mentions they were holding hands as they walk. You know, you see this, the two friends will sometimes hold hands. Not so much in America, you don't see this. Two men walking, holding hands. It gives a different message here in America. But it's very commonplace there. So they're walking, holding hands, laughing, having this kind of heated but very friendly debate back and forth. And laughing at the idea that Lord Jagannath's servants have been at fault. They both knew, both of them, the power and glory of Lord Jagannath's servants. And anyway, with a merciful heart, sometimes Lord Krishna bewilders his servants. And this causes some type of confusion. So in this way, the Lord had personally bewildered, personally, he entered into this situation. He personally bewildered the mind of Pundarik Vidyaniti. Now, we come to the part where the Lord breaks that bewilderment. So the two friends left the temple very happily. They had performed their duties. And then after accepting a meal at Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's place, they returned with all the devotees. There was prasad being served, because after any big kirtan and darshan, there's prasad. So they distributed prasad, and then Pundarik Vidyaniti returned to his home and fell asleep. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is none different than Lord Jagannath. We should not doubt this for a moment. And Lord Jagannath and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are the self-same Lord in the heart. So Mahaprabhu knew everything. Manifesting as Lord Jagannath, he entered into the dream of Pundarik Vidyaniti. And Pundarik Vidyaniti saw there in his dream was was Lord Jagannath himself. However, we always see that big smiling face of Jagannath, such a beautiful big smile. Of course, the British, they considered it to be a horrific thing, but that's because they had no understanding. So, and I remember back in the day when stickers were what we dealt with, there was that big smiling Jagannath face, and it said, smile, and we'd pass this out. So. But that was not the face of Jagannath's smile. Jagannath was very angry, and staring angrily at Pundarik Vidyaniti. And then he reached over and began to slap Pundarik Vidyaniti. Now, it doesn't mention in this whether he manifested hands at the end of those Jagannath arms or whether he just smacked him with those arms. But you can imagine either way. Both the brothers, not just Jagannath, but Jagannath and Balaram, began to violently, it mentions, slap the face of Pundarik Vidyaniti, his cheeks, repeatedly. Pundarik Vidyaniti was actually in pain. He's sleeping in his bed, and he's having this dream, but he's actually in pain from this. And he began to call out, Krishna, Krishna, save me! Krishna, save me! I've made an offense, please forgive me! And then he fell at the feet of Jagannath and Balaram. He said, oh Lord, what offense have I created that you're beating me like this? Jagannath spoke up to him. He said, you? There is no end to your offensiveness. Just as there is no question of pure or impure in my case, the same holds true for those who are my servants. You are staying here. You should know this. If you thought it was impure, then why did you stay at all? Better you leave and go back to your own home where you can examine and maintain your level of purity. You do not know anything about my exalted nature or the exalted nature of my servants, even though you come and stay at Jagannath Puri. Why would you stay in this place? If you stay here, it will simply ruin your status as an upper caste Brahmin. You should go back to your own home. Then you will be able to protect your upper class status. So Jagannath is making a big stab at him. Not only are you offensive, but you're such an arrogant so-called upper class. Just go away from here. Just go. Leave. You thought that there was something wrong with my festival? Did you forget this is my festival? You thought there was something wrong with it? You treat me like the Supreme Lord, but you criticize my servants. This is a very important point Jagannath makes here. Don't treat Radha Shyam like this, and then their pujaris and caretakers and managers, all those people. No, you can't do that. You saw a mistake in the offering of starched and unwashed garments, but this was your mistake. So in this dream, in his heart, Pundarik became very terrified, and he grasped at the lotus feet of Lord Jagannath, and he begged, my dear Lord, please, please forgive this sinner's offense. I am definitely an offender. I am definitely an offender. Lord, I tell this to you. You have punished me, and you have punished me for using this mouth to mock your servants. In this way, my Lord, everything you have done for me is good. An auspicious day now dawns for me, for with your graceful hand, you have slapped my mouth and my cheeks because they have uttered words of criticism of your servants. And then Lord Jagannath said, seeing that you are my servant, I have been very kind to you. This is why I have punished you. So, in this way, Pundarik Vidyaniti woke up. Oh, before the brothers left, they churned that angry face they had to him to a smiling face again, Jagannath and Balaram. And then they left in the dream. So after this dream, Pundarik woke up and he saw that his cheeks were actually red from being slapped. And this made him smile very much. And he felt, he said, oh, this is auspicious. This is very auspicious. I have committed an offense and the Lord has punished me. I am so fortunate that the Lord punished me. So We see here that devotee being punished in a dream is a very fortunate thing. He awakes from the dream and there's no more offenses. This is the lesson we can learn from Pundarika Vidyaniti. We should be careful not to offend those that we can't understand their nature, and we should be careful not to be the source of causing that offense. Either way, both sides of the coin of an offense, Pundarika Vidyaniti has been an example of this. So there are many, many other things we can say, but I think it was important just to capture this essence of what I consider to be the real lesson from the life of Pundarika Vidyaniti. So we're finishing timely. Somehow we managed to cover six personalities. And I thank everyone. If there's any questions or comments, Sesha Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. Just sort of a detailed question. In the paintings of the two Leelas that you described, Pundarik dressed very opulently, and Pundarik being slapped by Jagannath and Balaram. In that painting of Jagannath, Balaram slapping Pundarik, he's dressed very simply. Is there any indication that he gave up that fancy dress? Or any information about that?
I've not read anywhere in any of the Shastras describing his pastimes that he renounced that opulent way of life. First point. Second point, he was sleeping, so probably slept a little. I mean, I have one dear friend that always teases me because I wear pajamas and a t-shirt and socks when I go to bed. You know, well, what do you dress so much for going to sleep? So, you know, but generally we just put on something to sleep in. The third consideration could be that the paintings may or may not be the exactly accurate description of how the person appeared. But for the sake of his pastime, it would be clear to say that he would be dressed less glorious than Jagannath and Balaram. Yeah, so I can't give a definitive answer, but can just speak from those three points. Looks like we might have a definitive answer. Yes?
When was he?
Oh, here, wait for the... Yeah.
Where was Pundarik sitting when Gadadhar and Mukunda went to see him? He was sitting, he was in his office, so to speak, or what was
it? No, it was like we would call Prabhupada's times his sitting room, because he was receiving guests.
Okay, so he was in his house.
He understood that Mukunda's coming and Gadadhar's coming, so it was his residence.
His residence,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So we can imagine it was even more comfortable than maybe another circumstance might have been, because we always see to the fact that our own residence is very nicely put together. You know.
Yeah, so it seems like he was sitting in his residence, he was there to receive the guests, and therefore he was dressed in such a way, and I guess maybe different as he goes to see the Lord. Or...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's quite possible. That's quite possible. Yeah, that's another answer to that. Yeah.
Mother Agatmika has a question asking, what does niddhi mean? She's asking online.
What's that?
She's asking what the word niddhi means. Niddhi like...
Niddhi?
Like prem niddhi.
Wealth.
The wealth. The source, the collection, the embodiment of. Prema, or the embodiment of, like that. Acharya niddhi, source of being, an example like that, yeah. All right, we'll finish there. We can spend the rest of the day reading about these different personalities and absorbing ourselves in so many pastimes of all the great devotees that have come before us to give us an example in devotional service. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.